Hey, this is Dr. Robert Glover, and welcome. I have with me today a very special guest that I'm going to be interviewing. This is Dawn Baker. And for those of you who've listened to my previous interview with Dawn or taken his class through TPI University, Back from Distraction, or just know of his reputation, especially in the Seattle area, Dawn's reputation does indeed precede him. He is a guru when it comes to ADD, ADHD. Not only has he been dealing with ADD, ADHD in himself through most of his adult life, he's a researcher, he's an expert in terms of information about it, but even beyond that, he's really just a wizard in working with real life people in learning how to take ADD, ADHD and use it as an asset to help them get unstuck in their life and actually take the special unique qualities that tends to go with ADD and ADHD and turn those into real positives. So Dawn, welcome. Glad to have you here today.
Hey, Robert. I'm really glad to be back. Good to be talking to you again.
You know, Dawn, every time we talk, I don't care if it's just informally over just having a cup of coffee or talking about class development or doing an interview like this, I always learn so much more because I'm still in that upward learning curve. I started recognizing ADD symptoms in men maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And the more I started paying attention, the more I just started seeing them a lot. And I started seeing them a lot in men that I worked with that were really highly intelligent, really smart guys. And actually, that's what you and I are going to talk about today is smart but stuck. And so, as I said in the interview I did with you before, I've wanted for some time to find somebody who could teach an online course on ADHD, ADD, ADHD, because I've just seen it everywhere I go with so many men, especially undiagnosed ADD, ADHD, that this is working against them. They're like swimming upstream and they don't even know it. And a lot of times, like I said, they're really smart guys, really accomplished guys, but they've had to work harder than everybody else. They've had to struggle more and stuff keeps getting in their way and they don't even realize why it is or what's coming up for them. So I was so thrilled when you agreed to develop Back from Distraction. And you've taught it for us once already. We're just about to launch the second go around of it. And I'm just thrilled because again, I learn so much. And I know the people listening to this little conversation today are going to learn a lot too. So again, I'm glad I bumped into you and I'm glad you're working with me and together we're helping men really become aware of and find really powerful tools to help them deal with ADD, ADHD. So again, thanks for being here, Dawn.
You betcha. Hey, Robert, I got to say, I've told you this before, I think on the previous recording, that I appreciate the opportunity to have a platform to teach you guys and for you, Robert, be kind of voraciously interested in ADD, ADHD, because it's pretty darn pervasive. And I was so excited when Dr. Tom Brown out of Yale published his book, Smart But Stuck. It just came out maybe 3 weeks ago, and I've got it on my Kindle. And so talking today gives me the opportunity to do something that I love to do, and that's a deep dive into something, to understand something that fascinates the hell out of me.
Yeah, and I'm excited about this because you mentioned the book by Tom Brown, and that is the title of kind of our little interview, Smart But Stuck. Mm-hmm. And I've just read an excerpt from it a couple of days ago. And actually, just to give everybody listening to this just a little preview of what this conversation is going to be about is I've taken some quotes from Tom Brown's book, Smart But Stuck, and I'm going to kind of just tee them up for you and ask you to talk about it from your own experience of how you see these issues, especially around emotions, maybe unconscious emotions, conflicting emotions, and talk about how you've seen it affect people and how, as they become aware, can actually use their emotional makeup to help move them forward. So before we do that, I've got a couple of surprise questions for you, and you didn't know these were coming, but here's two questions I just want to, and you just give me your quick one paragraph answer to these. The sure. First one is, I know we're going to get people reacting as soon as we use the word disorder, attention deficit yep. disorder, ADHD, people react, and they react with a lot of intensity as soon as the word disorder comes up. So why do you think that is? Number one, people tend to react with such intensity around the term ADD, ADHD. And what do you tell people in terms of the actual name that includes disorder in the name of what we're talking about?
Yeah, what a great question. Yeah, I'll respond real quickly. So if you do the BFD course, guys, in lesson two, we're going to go over this. But so there's an emerging term called neurodiversity. And it's a departure from the model that promotes disorder. Disorder, stereotypically means you got a problem, you got to fix it.
Right? Yeah, you're messed
neurodiversity,
up.
Yeah, you're messed up. That's what people are reacting to, myself included. I don't know how you feel about that, but to be called disordered, it doesn't work for me. It just doesn't work, right? So I've kind of latched on to neurodiversity as a great explanation. Go to Wikipedia, check it out, see what you think. See if that feels a little bit more palatable.
I like that. Basically just saying that your brain's different from my brain, and that's okay. And let's just figure out what our unique brain type is and learn to help it work for us instead of against us.
Absolutely, yes.
All right. That was a good short answer. I like that one a lot. Neurodiversity. Okay, second question. Yeah. And I don't know if you can give me quite as short an answer, but you did. You nailed that one. Okay. When I talk with men, adult males, that's pretty much my practice nowadays is adult men. And I bring up the possibility that they might have some symptomology of ADD or ADHD. And I tell you what, I could probably tell men that they might be a Martian and get less resistance. And what do you think that's about, that maybe men especially have a lot of resistance? And then you start hearing, oh, that you'll say, well, that's just overdiagnosed and we're over medicating and this and that. And I go, yeah. But I think you might have some symptoms of ADD. Think maybe we could look at that. Right. What do you think that resistance is?
A couple of things. So in a disorder model, it means you got to fix something that's broken, right?
Okay.
So primarily the focus is going to be on what you're not doing well, right? I don't care if you're ADHD or not. Nobody likes to say that, hey, man, you're not doing all this stuff right. I think that's one of the reasons. And what I love is kind of in the emerging literature, there's a guy out of Harvard that published a book last year called Fast Minds. And what I like about the language that's emerging is rather than looking at ADHD, attention deficit disorder, we're looking at ADHD as a constellation of traits that comprise a syndrome. And so one of the things I encourage you to look at if you're thinking about the course is, rather than say, oh my God, I got this thing, more like, hey, I'm going to suspend judgment for a second. I'm going to be curious. Let me look at this list of traits Don has listed, because in them, I've listed strengths and the things that we don't do well. Mm-hmm. See if there's anything that resonates. If even one or two of those resonate, you're a prime candidate to take BFD. You don't have to have a diagnosis. You do not have to wear this label.
Yeah, and I like it that we don't have to wear a label or be diagnosed or even necessarily get medicated. And I think that's what a lot of guys resist is the idea, well, I don't want to take drugs to function. And as I know you talk about in the course, for some people, medication is helpful. And even if you're taking medication, there's a lot of other life skills that can be developed to help the medication be more effective. And if you don't take medication, which not everybody needs, there's still a lot of great skills to help maximize, again, your unique brain type. And I know what you mean. I think as a guy, and I bump into this with men, is that I think we like to believe we're masterful. I think that's important to us.
Mm-hmm.
But
absolutely.
One of the things I've found is a lot of guys that have undiagnosed ADD, ADHD are really smart, are talented, but yet don't live up to their full potential or achieve what they or other people think they should be achieving. And they often come away with a sense of not feeling masterful and maybe even a sense of shame and defectiveness. And then if you throw out some label to them, well, you might have ADD. It's kind of like, oh, pile on even more that makes me feel less than masterful, less than competent.
Death knell. It's a death knell. Yeah, it's a point well taken, honestly. And I think one of the things that I encourage you to do in the BFD course for anybody that I'm working with is if you can back away from maybe the myth or whatever you read out there, and just allow yourself to kind of be exposed to some of the information, the neurobiological research on this, the imaging, and to look at kind of how this manifests. I think one of the things that can be incredibly confounding for us, those of us that live with the traits of ADHD, is there's this paradox between, you know, you're capable of extremely amazing things, and at the same time, I lose my keys. Stereotypically, I'll say I lose my keys, right? But whatever, you've got your own flavor of that. How can I be both of these? Also, it's contextual. How can there be this variability? ADHD is tied to level of interest. When I'm interested in something, I can kick ass. When something bores me, that's when my symptoms show up. That's confusing for me and others.
Yeah. So let's just go with that, because some of the questions, some of the quotes I'm going to read to you from Tom Brown's book address those very issues of how emotions play a part in the fact that I can kick ass at some things and can't even get myself started, get myself going on other things. And that there's an emotional component. So let me just read a little bit from the introduction of Tom Brown, Smart But Stuck. And I'm going to read a couple quotes, and then I'm going to ask you to just kind of dive in and maybe expand a little bit and talk about how you do address these issues in Back From Distraction, or BFD, as we affectionately call the course. So let me go ahead and just read a little intro about Smart But Stuck. And I guess we'll give a little plug to Tom Brown as we do this.
Hey, so, Robert, before you go,
yes.
I want to know, how did I do with the spontaneous questions?
Oh, man, you kicked ass.
Okay. All right. Go ahead. Keep going then.
I knew you could handle it. That's why I wasn't afraid of teeing them up for you.
Thank you. Okay.
So, Smart But Stuck, Emotions in Teens and Adults with ADHD, explains how and why many with ADHD get stuck in their schooling, employment, and relationships due to emotional problems they did not know they have. It describes how emotions, positive and negative, often unconsciously, play a critical role in prioritizing tasks, sustaining or shifting interest and effort, holding thoughts in working memory, and choosing to engage in or avoid tasks and situations. And I'm just going to read you a quote just from a little bit further down along the same line. And I'll ask you just to kind of comment on it, and again, maybe give an illustration of how you see this happening, especially in men, and then how perhaps this is addressed in the Back From Distraction course. So here's another quote from Tom Brown's Smart But Stuck. And I'll also tell you, Dawn, when you type on your keyboard, I'm hearing it over the system. So
I'm so sorry, Robert. I will cease.
Yeah, I mean, that just keeps me totally distracted. But I could just
so
think,
sorry.
If that could be a test for our listeners. If you typing on the keyboard made them to where they couldn't hear anything else I was saying, maybe that's a good pretest for ADHD.
Well, it's me not managing my emotions.
That's exactly what it must be. Your emotions must have taken over your keyboard right there.
They totally do.
And for those of you that are listening, Dawn and I are not in the same room. We're actually in the same state and country, but we're in different locations. So here's another quote from Tom Brown. Most people with ADHD experience the same frustrations, fears, sadness, pride, shame, excitement, and so on that spontaneously arise in everyone else in various situations. What is different is the chronic difficulty most people with this disorder, okay, there's that word, disorder, experience in managing and responding to their emotions, particularly in many situations where emotions are mixed and conflicting. And what I underline the words mixed and conflicting emotions, and that this is maybe particularly challenging for people with the traits of ADHD. Can you comment on that?
You bet. You bet. If you do the BFD course, one of the pieces of learning that I'll emphasize is to learn about working memory and executive functions. Executive functions reside in the prefrontal cortex of our brains,
with ADHD, our executive function impaired at times, especially when things get stressful, if they're boring, whatever. And so Brown's point with this is, historically, we knew that emotion played a huge role in some of our stuckness, right? But maybe over the past 20 or 30 years, we've moved away from kind of the significance of emotions, and we've looked at the other aspects of working memory. But what I like about Brown's book, there is a guy out of Utah years ago, Paul Wender, who did a lot of research on ADHD and emotion. And I always, so this is intuitive. I always knew, for instance, with my procrastination, I can look at a stack of papers and I can have this emotional response that I'm not even conscious of. That's pretty much distaste. I hate it, right? Mm-hmm. I don't like doing paperwork. And so basically we can have a feeling about just about everything. We can have feelings about what we feel. We can have feelings about whatever. But his point here is that if your executive function and working memory are compromised, then what's going to happen is one emotion is going to become predominant, and it will, it doesn't negate other emotions, but they go into the background. So if you're having complex emotional experiences to something, you're likely just to be feeling one of them. Am I doing okay answering this?
Well, yeah, and I'm just kind of thinking out loud, because yeah, that makes sense. Because I mean, you really can have a love-hate relationship with something, and if having a love-hate relationship just causes the gears to grind to a halt, you don't get to actually see what you love about it and what you hate about it. It sounds like you just feel one thing pretty intensely, and it sounds like you miss out on just kind of the rainbow, the nuances of having a lot of different feeling, emotional experiences of one thing.
Yeah.
And so one emotion, as from what I hear you saying, tends to just take over and kind of push the rest of them down.
You bet.
Okay.
And the two points with this, one is that we're not talking just about negative emotion. We're talking about positive and negative emotion. So you can have, I mean, it can be very odd, but you can be super happy in a moment when you're required to be happy or have a complexity of emotion, like to attend to somebody else's sadness or something. I'll give an example. Personally, 20 years ago in the relationship I'm in, one of the reasons I found I stayed out of relationships was because I was having such huge emotional experiences that I didn't want to have those experiences. So I would hold myself up out of relationship. And when I chose 20 years ago to be in a relationship and make it work, one of the things I had to work with was, it was almost like a PTSD response. I would be flooded with emotion to the extent that I wouldn't be able to talk, to move, whatever. That would be an example of what we're talking about here, where, you know, I lost my personal power. I lost personal efficacy. It was almost like I became immobilized. Over the years, I've learned to handle the level of distress that I feel physically, emotionally, and I'm much better in relationships. So,
and it sounds like a big part of it was you learning to be an observer of yourself and actually recognize and observe and maybe name the both the conflicting, mixed, and intense emotions you were having all at the same time. It sounds like you must have found some skills to be able to step back and just observe them and maybe speak of them and maybe regulate them in other ways.
Yeah, and my wish for you guys, if you do BFD, is that you don't have to go through years of pain. And that what I offer are kind of insights and a little bit of education around this, so you can begin to understand, take this stuff and apply it in the moment so that you can begin to move through this more easily.
You know, and that is what I love about the work I do and the work you do, whether we call it coaching, therapy, self-help. Man, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. I love one of my favorite all-time books is Scott Peck's The Road Less Traveled. And yeah. I think that's the all-time best-selling self-help book. And he says in there that most of us suffer in life because we go looking for shortcuts. And he said the one legitimate shortcut in life is therapy, where you actually do can go find out from somebody else an easier way to do something, or Amen. Help us become yeah. more aware, so we don't have to, you know, keep reinventing that wheel. So, okay, yeah. Let me read you another quote then, again about emotion, from Smart But Stuck by Tom Brown. He writes, many people with ADHD describe chronic difficulties managing frustration, anger, worry, disappointment, desire, and other emotions. They speak as though these emotions, when experienced, take over their thinking the way that a computer virus invades a computer, making it impossible for them to attend to anything else. They find it very difficult to get the emotion into perspective and to put it in the back of their mind and to get on with what they need to do. Now, I was really hit by that, because I would think this may not just be an ADHD thing, but I think it is actually something that we probably all have to learn in learning to recognize and regulate emotion, is that if we let one powerful emotion take us over, and that's all we can think about, it's all, you know, and it becomes all consuming. And maybe we still need to get up and take care of the kid, or, you know, cook a meal, or get a report handed in. And if that one emotion has just taken us over, I could see where we could become totally immobilized and paralyzed.
You bet. Yeah. And, you know, Smart But Stuck, it's, I mean, you can have a high degree of intelligence, but you can have such a negative impact from emotional experience that's where the stuckness comes from. And can I just share an example of a client session I just had on my last hour?
Sure, do.
You good with that?
Yeah.
So I'll call my client Jim, but so this is a guy who chose to try medication. And once again, I don't say you have to or you don't have to. To me, medication is merely a tool, just like your diet is and your sleep and everything else. But nonetheless, this is the third day of him with his trial of meds, and it's working for him. And so I'll speak directly to this quote right here. And so what happened for Jim was he would come in and talk to me about how codependent he felt in his relationship. And I always ask people to define that, because I don't want to make an assumption that I know. And he said, basically, what I do is I'll say something to my wife, and it's like I think about it all day, and I go home, and I got my antenna up, my radar up, and I want to make sure that things are cool with her. He said, the thing that really sucks about it is she's usually just fine. It's me. I have a hard time. I've offended or hurt her. Fast forward to today. He said, and he's saying this with a smile on his face. I've never seen him smile because he's been so anxious. And he said, I had the most kick-ass weekend. So he loves to fly his glider, right? And he said, I got up for 3 days, and I was able to have these amazing conversations with my wife and to allow her emotional experience, to just let her be.
Yeah.
And I could just sit there, I could watch her, and I could have my emotional experience. So historically what's happened, his emotion, his vigilance watching her mood basically became viral for him over and over and over, and just took him out of that relationship. He became fused and enmeshed. And for him, the medication has been a tool for him to be able to disengage emotionally. Working memories improved.
Yeah, and you know what? I can relate to that. I was just telling a friend of mine, actually another colleague of mine, Roger Nix. We were having a walk last week, and I told him a story of a situation in my own life where it has to do with some work being done on my website. And as they're doing some work to, quote, improve my website, the technicians doing it over in New Zealand keep breaking stuff. And this is stuff that I paid a lot of money to have it done exactly the way I want, and it keeps getting broken. And they've been fixing some, but I was getting frustrated that some important parts were not getting fixed. So I noticed myself getting really wound up about it and kind of just spinning about it. And so I just sat down and wrote a letter to the manager. I asked my tech guy that works with me, who should I talk to over at their end? I wrote him an email and I just clearly said, here's where I'm frustrated. I'd like to talk to somebody on the phone, you know, from Seattle to New Zealand. And I just want to tell you where I'm frustrated, where I'm stuck, that this is happening. And I could tell the emotions were really intense. They were really spinning inside of me. And after I wrote the email and sent it off, I felt calmer and like I'd taken action. But I noticed throughout the rest of that afternoon, I would start getting spun up about my website issues again. That emotion would take over. And I would notice every time that happened, everything took on an intensity. Everything took on, you know, became too big. The stuff that I should have, I would have just handled and not worried about. Everything took on the same emotional proportion as my website frustration. And what I did is I just consciously, because I've practiced doing this for several years now, I've learned to, once I've taken action and say, okay, I've taken action, I'm not going to let my mind spin up, ruminate about this thing. If I need to revisit it, I will. And I would put it kind of back in, like he said, Tom Brown says, in the back of my mind, I've dealt with it. And I don't need to stay in this spun up state because there's nothing else I can do. I've done what I can do. And then I found myself feeling calm and then walking through my day and things feeling good. And Roger commented, he says, well, your brain must be easy to regulate in that way that you can just put it in the back of your mind. I said, no, I've been practicing that for a long time. It took practice, but with practice, we can learn to be conscious of and regulate those intense emotions. Doesn't mean we have to dismiss them, but we learn what we can do with them, what we can't do with them, and how we can store them up and come back to them later on and not have them right in the middle of our brain 24/7. And so I like that there are skill sets, and I know that's something that you're really good at, helping people observe that tendency and help them honor those intense emotions, but not necessarily let them drive the bus throughout the day.
You bet. You bet. I love your story because, you know, what's key to your story is the fact that you were willing to pay attention to how you felt. And you were willing to pay attention to how pervasive it is. And one of the things about it, if you do dive into BFD material, it's this is a process. And like, you know, just like you're talking about, Robert, just how you say this took practice, right? I mean, you didn't learn this overnight, but to be able to put it in the background like that is awesome.
Yeah, and I'm a chronic worrier, and it's taken practice. Okay, next quote from Smart But Stuck by Tom Brown. And I like this one because I never really thought of this before, and I kind of want your read on it. He writes, thus far, researchers and clinicians have focused too much on how people with ADHD demonstrate problems in putting the brakes on expression of emotions. There hasn't been sufficient attention given to the emotional problems with ignition, chronic difficulties with getting started on necessary tasks and staying motivated to finish what needs to be done. And I really like that because it makes sense. If a person is, you know, spinning out of control, playing video games, you know, way too much. All right, let's help them learn to regulate that behavior and put it in more, you know, of a moderate type thing. But how about that side of ADHD where guys have difficulty getting the emotion that actually pushes you to go do stuff you need to get done? Because that's an emotional piece. Anytime you start something, especially something you're not that interested in, something is challenging, difficult, foreign, it takes an emotional push to get the ball rolling, to get you moving. So what are your thoughts about that?
No, I, once again, ADHD it's an interest-based diagnosis. So anything we're interested in, we have positive emotion associated with, and therefore the emotion becomes the ignition, right? It's the thing that actually drives motivation. And, you know, the opposite is true. If something's boring, basically there may be even a negative emotion associated, and therefore it's hard to drive motivation. There's a guy, David Gwork, that I love. He writes a book, or has written a book, called Permission to Proceed. And one of the strategies that I actually use that he taught me was, I call it my sandwich technique, but you start with something of high interest where you have the juice, the emotion. Like, here's an example for me. I love to work outside in the yard this time of year. And So I'll give myself an hour in the yard, having just a great time being random, put my laptop in the garage about 20 feet away, and I will time myself. I do not like to do paperwork. You'll hear me say that a lot.
Don, how do you feel about paperwork?
Hey, Robert, I love it. I'm fading up.
You turn every, oh, no, you have to, into, oh, boy, you get to, right?
You got it. So anyway, that emotion, the good feeling from doing something that I like and I'm interested in, I use that and I take that as I walk in and work on paperwork for half an hour. So, and then I sandwich on the back end, high interest again, I'll go back out in the yard. Or I'll go ski in, I'll keep my laptop in my car. You know what I'm saying? So it's high interest, low interest, high interest.
I'm even visualizing somebody that loves doing paperwork but hates working in the yard could do some paperwork, go out work in the yard, and get to come back and do some paperwork.
Yes, indeed.
There's got to be people like that, just like this is neurodiversity. There's got to be people that just love paperwork and hate working in the yard.
I bet there are. I don't know any. Do you?
I know people that hate working in the yard. I hate paperwork, too, so I'm with you on that one.
So that wouldn't be your strategy. That's funny.
All right, here's another quote. And, you know, I'm really digging this one because – one of the things I've been paying attention to in a lot of the guys I work with recently, and I could see this maybe even becoming another book for me at some point, and I'm calling it The Ruminating Brain. And it's about the tendency of, I think, a genetically predisposed brain to latch on to certain things and spin and ruminate about them, and typically in a negative way, either putting ourselves in a negative light, past experiences, things that might happen in the future, what are people thinking about us? And I'm just seeing that, like, you know, once you're a hammer, everything's a nail. I've been seeing it everywhere. And when I read this in Tom Brown's, in the part of the book I read, I won't claim I've read the whole thing. I read a preface from or excerpt from it. He calls it attentional bias. And as soon as I saw that term, I thought, ooh, this is going to be good. Attentional bias. And he says, they tend to be particularly alert and quick to notice any comments or actions that fit with the emotions that preoccupy them, often without paying much attention to the context or to other information that might provide a useful, different view. Some seem to be constantly alert for signs of anything to worry about. Others are excessively alert for any signs of potential frustration or discouragement. And actually, as I'm reading that, I'm thinking about that example you gave of your client that every time he came home and he was worked up about something relationship-wise, he started probably read everything that his wife did in terms of that attentional bias, what he was expecting her to respond to. So, man, as I read this, I thought that is so true with the people I see with ruminating brains. Like, for example, if it's a single guy and he thinks, well, I'm unattractive because I don't have a full head of hair. And then he goes and talks to a woman and maybe she has low interest in engaging with him. He goes, I knew it. It's because I don't have a full head of hair. And her reaction to me is proof of that's why women aren't interested in me. And they just find proof for whatever they already believe to be true in every experience that they have. And they totally ignore the evidence that maybe is contrary to that attentional bias.
Yeah. Yeah, that is, I really like this too when I saw it. And, he goes on and he says, even hearing a slight uncertainty in a coworker's reaction to a suggestion may interpret this guy's stubborn disapproval. And it's this whole negative feedback loop ensues, right? Mm-hmm. And depression, anxiety, argumentative, defensiveness, right? This even if you're treating your ADHD, however you're doing that, these are patterns that take a lot of work and practice to shift. You know, you have to be willing to look at the fact that I am taking myself down this negative highway, and I've got to stop this. I need to insert a pause here, right? It can be so innate and so ingrained that a lot of us don't even notice we're doing that.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's what I'm finding with the ruminating brain. And when I pointed out to men, I asked them actually, get a notebook and for a week, observe those, the term you use, negative highways your brain takes you down. I call them loops, ruminations, and I encourage men to give them names. You know, the sky is falling loop, plan B loop. Oh no, she must be pissed at me loop. You know, give it a name, because once you've given it a name, it's a hell of a lot easier to observe it when your brain just kind of kicks into it and starts spinning up around it.
Right. I was going to mention one other thing with this. And when you look at what's fascinating to me, you look at the biology underneath the traits of ADHD, often there is either a deficiency or a lack of absorption of a neurotransmitter, dopamine. Dopamine is responsible for seeking behavior. Like, for instance, if you're on the computer and you do deep dives, right? If you go boom, boom, site to site to site to site, you can't stop yourself. Rumination is very similar in the way, I think it can also be a way that our brains engage and get focused in a very negative way.
Yeah, that's profound.
That makes sense?
Oh, that makes perfect sense, because I've always wondered, every time I look at any human behavior, any animal behavior, I always try to ask, what is the payoff for that? If a person's brain is ruminating, what's the payoff? If a person has prejudice, what's the payoff? And I always, you know, we don't have to look too, like, we don't have to get too complex about, you know, well, because of my mother did, or my father, or because a lot of it, as you said, is just pure brain reward. If the brain gets a chemical that rewards an action, it's like Pavlov's dog, it's going to keep doing it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to read one more quote to you. Thanks for that. I mean, I'm going to do some deep dive of my own into attentional bias, because we go out and we find information that supports not only our intellectual biases, but our emotional biases. So, you know, if you think you're unattractive to women and you're convinced of it, you'll go find a bunch of information to support it, and you'll totally ignore the information that could be contrary, and then you will act as if that information is true, which often tends to, you know, perpetuate that it often does tend to play out to be true, because our brain is going to act consistently with its deeply held emotional beliefs. So, Don, one more quote, and this is back to smart guys, because I have a guess that men and women, I'm sure, are going to be listening to this, teenagers, adults, but I'm going to guess that the majority are adult male. They're going to listen to this interview just because they found it on my website or found it on the internet somewhere. And a lot of them are probably going to be really, really smart guys. I mean, not just, you know, average IQ, but getting up there towards some scary, smart IQ, really bright guys. And Tom Brown writes, not only is it possible for people with a high IQ to suffer from ADHD, but it is likely that they'll suffer longer without adequate support or treatment, because the people in their lives assume, quite mistakenly, that anyone who is really smart can't suffer from ADHD. What do you think about that?
Oh, it's fascinating to me. I like you, have a variety of people that I work with, but the demographic that's so underserved in Seattle, you know, we've got tons of tech people here and brilliant, brilliant people who basically not necessarily skated through life, but skated or were able to get through life fairly unscathed. And you get into a work environment where there is a huge complexity, or you have a manager that is punitive and scrutinizing, all of a sudden all hell breaks loose, right? I think I want to go back real quick. I think this has been especially true for women historically. And women historically have not been diagnosed with ADHD, but mm-hmm. with depression.
Yeah.
And women, I'm stereotyping here, but you know, it's like women academically, we have a stereotype that they do better academically, right? So if you're good in school, if you kind of soar through, it's like there's no friggin' way, according to the myths that we know about ADHD, that this person could live with certain traits, right?
Mm-hmm.
So high IQ, it's funny, I have a guy I work with who, he and his friend, as a joke, went to Mensa and they were admitted, right? So they're really smart guys, super ADHD. This guy basically is bored and hates his job, And he creates chaos at his job just to keep himself excited and interested, right?
Yeah.
But there's part of him, he has a lot of fear about moving forward and really living and stepping into his potential. And that's his ADHD.
Even the fear of moving into what he's capable of is part of the emotional dynamic of his ADHD.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you know this, and I've seen it with so many men that, again, yeah, you and I both work in the Seattle Bellevue area. There's 40,000 Microsoft people alone, Boeing engineers, Amazon, Expedia, Starbucks. You know, there's all kinds of tech and engineering companies. And a lot of these smart guys I work with, actually, a lot of them don't realize how smart they are. I'm sitting there going, man, you're fucking smart. and they don't even get their smart because they've often struggled so much, or because they were bored in school. They, you know, they just fucked around and didn't do their work, or they procrastinated. You know, what a lot of them don't do, they just never turn their homework in. They did it. It was a snap, and they didn't turn their homework in. And so they get poor grades, and they don't realize that they're smart because the ADD keeps, you know, sending them on different pathways. And but yet they tend to get these good jobs, and because they are smart, and many of them have learned to work really hard, and many of them learned how to hyper focus. And then they, you know, when either they do a deep dive in something they're interested in, or when the pressure's on and the adrenaline's pumping, and there's some negative consequences of them not finishing something, they can dive in and kick serious ass. And they, a lot of them have gotten by with those kind of, you know, stops and starts, without a smooth consistency of progression of starting stuff, following through, completing, living up to their potential. And again, because of those stops and starts, and even like, you know, crashing and burning and checking out at times, they come away with this emotional belief: there's something wrong with me. I'm not that smart. Why can't I get it together? Why can't I follow through? Why do I have such great ideas and I never put them into action? Everybody else seems to be able to do it. What's wrong with, there's always that what's wrong with me component of it.
Yeah, no, I as you're talking, I was just thinking, thinking about people, guys that I've worked with that have been highly successful, that are, you know, in some of the high ranking positions in some of the corporations around town, that are indeed ADHD. And somehow, you know, there's some of us that have been able to navigate and end up in areas and in situations and environments that really, really where our strengths can sink, right? Mm-hmm. Many of us aren't that fortunate, you know, but the thing that's cool about it is, if you're smart and stuck, there's hope, right? If you can learn about this, if you can begin to tailor this, harness it, and modulate emotional experiences, it's amazing what can happen.
And I like hearing you say that, because, guys, if you're listening to this right now, I'm sure it's obvious to you, Don Baker is a smart guy. And he's one of your tribe, right? He's one of the smart guys that found a way to get unstuck, or at least not stay stuck with ADHD. And I've been around Don long enough to know what a great life he's living, does have a great relationship. He travels, he skis, he's athletic, he's outdoorsy. I got to hold a workshop in his office last week. It's gorgeous, it's beautiful. So Don is one of those smart guys who did the deep dive into ADHD and not only became a researcher, teacher of it, coach, therapist, but he's practicing these skill sets in his own life. And that every one of my teachers on TPI University are people that have done their work on this issue that they're teaching. So, so if you're one of those smart guys and you're feeling stuck in relationship, work, school, whatever, Don, been there, done that, is still working on it daily in his life, because it's something you don't just, you know, kick into place and you're done. You wake up every day and use the skill sets. And I love that that's what Don is teaching in Back from Distraction. So whenever you're listening to this recording or interview, want you to do a couple things. Yes, of course. I want you to go to the landing page on drglover.com for Back from Distraction. Check the course out. Check the self assessments on the landing page and just be curious. Does this maybe apply to me? And if anything we've said in this interview or anything in your experience around ADHD, either working with it in your own life or resisting it in your own life, leave a comment on the blog where you downloaded this from. I'm going to post this on my blog site of drglover.com. That's where you'll find it. That's where you'll download it from. After you listen to this recording, if you want to share a comment with me, with Dawn, just your own personal experience, leave a comment on the blog for other people to read. And so they can kind of see what this interview is about, what you got out of it, what your experience of it was. So, yes, check out Back from Distraction. We offer it usually a couple times a year at drglover.com and leave a comment on my blog page about this interview and tell us what your takeaway or how you experienced it, especially in the terms of how the emotional impact of the things we've talked about. If you've experienced those in your life, share that experience with us. So, Dawn, before we wrap up, anything else you want to share? Anything else you want to say before we tie this thing up?
No, I just, real quick, I'll just reiterate what I said at the beginning of the recording, Robert, and I so appreciate you and what you do. I appreciate the emotion and how committed you are to reaching out to all these men. I so appreciate you. I mean, it basically what you're doing with ADHD is aligned with my mission, and that is to connect people living with traits of ADHD, to kind of step outside of the myths, the kind of the definition of it being disordered, and begin to maybe reset, reframe, recalibrate how you see this, right? So I appreciate the opportunity to expose people to the information. Ultimately, you guys are bright. You can make your own choices and decisions. Just check it out.
Yeah. Dawn, thanks again. Thanks for teaching Back from Distraction. Thanks for doing these interviews with me. I tell you what, even if we never put these out there for public consumption, I love doing them. I learn a lot. I love the exchange between us. So thanks again, and thanks again for teaching Back from Distraction. And again, please do go to the landing page on drglover.com and just check out Back from Distraction and see what it's about and see if it's something that you think might be helpful in your own life, especially in terms of joining with a tribe of other men who are actually dealing with very similar neurodiversity as you. And Dawn really stresses that welcome to the tribe concept. We're all in this together. No man left behind. You don't have to do this stuff alone. So go check out Back from Distraction. And then, as I said, please leave a comment on the blog where you downloaded this interview from. So again, Dawn, thank you. And those of you who are listening, thanks for listening.